that we can preserve this, because this is being recorded and it'll be posted shortly after the webinar. And that reminds me that we do have one that was recorded with David, oh gosh, I'm going to say it was about 2 weeks ago, roughly, and you'll find it at republicmagazine.com/webinar. It's listed there. You'll find it. Just go down a little ways and you'll see it. There was quite a bit of information given in that webinar. And the reason we scheduled this second one in particular so closely behind it is because we had far more questions that we could than we could get to. So one of the things we're going to do after just talking a little bit is to move right into questions that we had left over from last time. So with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and introduce David. And we had more of a formal introduction in the previous webinar, but just suffice it to say that David is quite qualified to talk on the subjects that he's talking on. He has degrees in finance and economics as well as engineering. He created silverinvestor.com website, and he originated the Morgan Report, and it's a monthly that covers economic news, overall financial health of the global economy, currency problems ahead, and reasons for investing in precious metals. And he really considers himself a big picture macroeconomic economist, and his main job he sees as education, really to educate people about honest money and the benefits of a sound financial system. And as he calls his second job, of teaching people to be patient and to have conviction in their investment holdings. So he's in high demand. He's been on so many of the major news and economics programs that you would recognize, just mentioning the names on all the major networks. And he does quite a bit of travel and teaching. It seems like every time that I talk to David, he's either just coming off a flight or hopping a flight to go somewhere around the globe. And, boy, I'll tell you, he is definitely on his game. There's no doubt about that. So with that, David, I did want to say that, you know, as I mentioned before, you were on a couple of weeks ago, and we had so many questions at that point. I want to address the balance of those questions, but I did have, and also to take questions that we have today that are coming up and currently. But before we do that, I just wanted to ask you one thing, David. I understand you are starting a new website. Tell us about that.
Well, in January of 2010, we're going to revamp the website. I think we're on our third iteration right now. In fact, the first one was done by yours truly, all by myself. That was probably 11, 12 years ago. Actually, a little bit longer than that. But anyway, I've had help for the last several years. But we posted a great deal of information for free to the public, and I don't have any regrets doing that. As you stated, my mission statement is to teach and empower people the benefits of an honest financial system, and I live that. However, we are going to make the site a little more accessible to the public, meaning it's going to be, I hate to use the word, but dumbed down. It's going to be a little more Web 2 based, which means a little simpler, a little more in your face. And for the commentary that I wish to give to the public will be in a blog format. So the landing page or the silver-investor.com website will land. It'll be simplified. It'll be more about if you want the free report, get the free report. If you want the basic report, get the basic report. You want the basic report and the alerts, you buy that. If you want to do a conference call like this one on a monthly basis, then that's the premium service. You'll get all the videos, the audios, and the alert system, and then there's the elite service as well. So we're going to focus more so people that land on the website really know what we are providing, because I have had many people come up to me over the years and talk about how much I've helped them financially, and I found they weren't subscribers, and that's fine. Not everyone has to be. But I've had a lot of feedback with people on the site and don't even realize that it's a twofold site, that it's a free, fun, educational teaching site, but additionally it's a member site for, you know, our best work, and our best work really is for our members. And So that's basically it. It's going to be simplified, a little easier to navigate, a little more clear on what we do, a little more clear on what the pricing structure is, a little more clear on, you know, if you want to book me for a speech or a TV appearance or some type of media event or a workshop or whatever. So it's going to be spelled out. So I don't want to harp on it too much, but look for a simplified, easier to navigate, and actually faster loading website in 2010. And for all of the people that are kind enough to give me their time today, just give us a little bit of leeway, please. Whenever you, you know, have your own server like we do and you pay these massive fees on a monthly basis, things do go wrong. So if the site isn't working perfectly the first week, two, or three, we would appreciate your feedback. Just be kind and let us know it's not working. You don't have to put any adjectives along with it. So with that, Earl, I'll hand it back to you.
Okay, great. And it sounds like it's, you know, new and improved for 2010. That's always, that's great for the new year. We've got Roger Wilson in New York City, and this was from before. Should we buy junk silver for emergency situations instead of the minted bullion I collect as well for my future investment savings?
Yeah, so I've been consistent here. Of course, as anyone knows that knows me a little bit, knows I'm very free market. So, you know, if you believe that you should have XYZ type of silver investment instead of what I'm about to tell you, then, of course, that's your prerogative. I'm not making this a right or wrong issue. But I've been very consistent here. What you want if you're starting a silver investment, or if you're a long-time silver investor and you don't have, I believe everyone should have a bag of silver, meaning, and that, for people that don't know, is referred to as junk silver in the trade. It's a canvas bag, like a bank bag, which is what they are, of $1,000 in face value. It can be dimes, it can be quarters, it can be half dollars. Now, if you have modest means, they sell them in denominations of a half a bag, which is $500 in face value, or actually quarter bags as well, which would be $250 in face value. Really doesn't matter if you have dimes, quarters, or halves. Most of what's around today, and there's very little left, actually, compared to what there used to be, say, a decade ago. But this is your, what I call, survival coinage. This would be very small denominations. I mean, let's take the example of dimes. You'd have, you know, in a $1,000 face value, you'd have 10,000 dimes. Every one of those at current prices is worth about $2 in fiat money, a little less than that. And you would use that, in the worst case, you'd use it as a barter item. So that is, I think, the safest and best place to start. They usually sell at a bit of a discount to melt, not always. Depends on supply and demand during the Y2K. There's a huge premium on them. If you have multiple bags, and they're cumbersome, I suggest, again, that each family have a bag. But if you want more than that, or you like them or whatever, that's fine. When there are big premiums on them, you can trade them. For the Y2K event that was basically a non-event, I forget the number, but the idea is absolutely correct. There was a premium of, I think, 30-40%. It was quite high. And in those instances, when you see those kinds of premiums, they really don't last very long. So it would be very wise for someone with bags to trade those bags for bars or for rounds. So you trade that $1,000 face value junk silver bag for silver bullion in 100-ounce bar form, or perhaps in 1-ounce round form. So I probably beat that one to death. But yeah, if anyone calls me a first time and says, "What do I buy first?" I always say, "Buy a junk bag of silver."
Okay. And Alan from Lafayette, Louisiana, asks, "How are gold and silver bullion sales taxed by the IRS?"
On a capital gains basis, first of all, let me make a disclaimer. I'm not a tax advisor, so you really need to check with your tax advisor. So what I'm about to say is my belief / understanding. I'm not certain, so I'll start with that. It's my understanding from the Silver Institute, they publish on this, they're basically taxed as a commodity. So they're in a higher tax bracket than you would get on, like, our long-term capital gains. Unfortunately, the Silver Institute has been instrumental in almost every year. There is a bill proposed through the House of Representatives to get gold and silver taxed at the same rate as you would on a stock that you held for more than a year. But it is, to my understanding, again, check with your tax advisor, that it is not at that rate yet. It's a bit of thorn in the side for the precious metals community. Silver Institute is definitely on our side in this one, in my view. But to the best, again, of my understanding at this current time, I don't think that you have the luxury of having a long-term capital gains rate on gold and silver. I think it's taxes at the higher rate.
Okay. And John in England asked David, has the amount of silver mined in 2009 likely to have contracted because of the slowdown?
Great question. I wish I can had an answer for you. We won't know until probably April 2010 when the first worldwide reports come out. My guess is it's flat, but I don't know. I just, you know, your guess probably is as good as mine. We've had an increase for the last probably 10 years due to the commodities boom that we've had up until really of November of 2008, where things really got clobbered, and of course we recovered from that somewhat. I think it's flattened out, but we'll just have to wait and see. I can say this, I doubt it's going to fluctuate more than 2% either direction. I'd be very surprised if it increased by any percentage, but it might have. I doubt if it's decreased that much. Most of these bigger mines keep going even if they're unprofitable for a time, because believe it or not, and I've studied this for, I had to do this study to convince myself it was true. It's actually cheaper in a lot of cases to keep a mine running at a loss than it is to shut it down. Because if you shut it down, the costs are tremendous, and then you have the startup costs that are tremendous. So from a purely business standpoint of what makes the most sense as a business entity, it's actually smarter in several cases to keep a mine running at a loss and keep it going, then shut it down and try to restart it. As simple as counterintuitive as that may sound, those are the facts.
Okay. And Stu and Jackson asked, silver is down, well, this was a couple of weeks ago when they said this, silver is down almost $2 in the last several days. Is this not a significant correction?
Don't know yet. Our daily signals put out sells on both gold and silver. The top in gold was on the 3rd of December. We had a sell signal out, I think it was four trading days later. Doesn't mean you're supposed to sell. All it means is you're supposed to hold or be cautious if you're big. You know, I'm free market. I mean, I can't do everything for everyone. But, you know, if you have a big position, you might consider hedging it. If you don't, you know, whatever. If you want to go short, go short. I would never go short the metals at this juncture because there's just, you know, all the surprises, in my view, will be to the upside. But if you have a big position, you might want to buy some puts, something like that. Anyway, the point is simple. The market knows more than any of us. The market gave us a sell on gold and silver basis the daily charts. Basis the weekly, both gold and silver are still in a consolidation or neutral trend. They're not in a bullish trend right now, but they're going, obviously they're going down, but from a weekly perspective, they're on a neutral or sideways overall trend, which is an indecision pattern, which means that they, you know, have as much likelihood to bottom here and go up as they do to keep going down. We don't know yet. So we're neutral at this juncture. I'm not making any new purchases yet. I'm usually a little conservative when I add new money. I want to be pretty sure the market's moving in my, you know, favor. I do think we're probably fairly close to some kind of a bottom here, but again, we haven't gotten that signal yet, so I'm going to just stand aside for now.
Okay. And Linda in Kihei says, I live on Maui and had to purchase metals by mail. I am concerned that when I want to cash in, I will lose value due to transport. What do you think?
You may. You know, that's true, but I don't – a couple things. One, you know, when things really heat up, there's going to be a lot more buyers than sellers, so you're going to be more in control than people that want to buy because you already have the metal and you bought it at a lower price in fiat terms. I believe, but I don't know, that there's probably a few coin dealers in the Hawaiian Islands. So I would definitely seek them out now while we're still relatively in the intermediate phase of this bull market and make some kind of, you know, relationship, friendship, or whatever you call it, with any of the dealers that are available there locally. So that way all you have to do is, you know, walk in. If it's another island, then of course that's transportation costs. I won't argue with you. As far as you know, selling back through the mail, if that's what you have to do, certainly. I mean, it's obvious that you would have to pay, you know, transportation costs there. But I think you might be able to one either take it into a local dealer. And the other option or options, and there's several I probably can't even think of right now, would be a universal auction house like an eBay. And there's more than just eBay. And you could sell over eBay and make your buyer pay the transportation cost. That's standard on eBay. And I've bought some off of eBay. I don't buy my, you know, bullion or junk coins from eBay, but I do collect. And I'm not a real newbie guy. I'm not real big on the rare coin thing, but I like unusual stuff. As an example of one of many Thor items I bought off of eBay, it's a Yuan Bao. The Yuan Bao is the Chinese silver. They're shaped like a boat. They're rather unusual. Yes, China's really the last major nation state to go off the silver standard, believe it or not. So I have three of those. They're very expensive. I paid far over what the silver content was, but again, they're very unique. I dropped one of those in somebody's hands that thinks, that they know a lot about silver. I'm not trying to be a know-it-all here. I'm trying to have a little bit of fun. My humor's a bit off. But anyway, it's something unusual, unique, and I drop it in somebody's hand, and most of the time they don't know what it is. And believe me, I didn't for years and years and years know what it was. But it was the money in China at one point in time.
Okay.
So that's an option. You could go to eBay and sell it that way and let the buyer pay the transportation cost. So don't get too uptight about, you know, when to sell it back and how much you're going to lose and whatever. I mean, basically what you want to do is, you know, have enough silver and gold where you can sleep at night, it's paid for, you can touch it, and go about your life. I mean, there is a possibility that the people that are really into this market, such as myself, and comment it constantly, could be wrong. In fact, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that the global financial system is going to get bigger, stronger, and better. But all of my work from the time I was very young till now points differently. It means that things are going to get more unusual, more hectic, more chaotic, and probably less secure. But that doesn't mean that the world stops and that we can't go on and make ourselves personally good or better lives.
Yeah, it seems almost like for things not to happen that so many folks are alluding to, including yourself, is you'd have to suspend reality, or it would have to dramatically shift overnight. I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. Sherry and Friday Harbor says, is it important to invest also in Canadian maple coins?
No, it's not. I mean, I have, you know, several varieties because I just do, and I like the maples. They're one of the better minted coins from government. I mean, if you are in the coinage and you are aware of, you know, what a good strike is, which means how well it's defined in the coin itself. And then the Canadian Mint does, in my view, a superior product to the U.S. Mints. And I know where the U.S. Mints are struck. They're struck right by me over here, one state over. But, no, silver is silver is silver, and that's what I try to teach in the 10 Rules of Silver Investing, especially when you're starting out. You want the most silver or gold for the money put down on the product. So if you can buy a one-ounce silver round by a private mint, it's still 1 ounce of silver, whether it's, you know, doesn't have a government stamp on it, it's still 1 ounce of silver. So, no, it's really not important. But, again, free market, if you are of the idea that by buying a government-minted coin it's more saleable or it's better or something like that, certainly your belief system is valid. But when you get to the coin shop, you might get a very, very slight premium for a Canadian maple leaf over a silver round. Now, I want to make one caveat here, and I want to be very clear because I don't need anyone coming back to me and saying, David, well, I listened to you on the lecture on, you know, the 23rd of December 2009, and you said, and I can't think ahead forever, but, you know, I do try to think ahead. So let's look at the situation with the Silver Eagle for a moment. These have been minted since 1986 under an act of Congress. I forget the year. I was involved in it, but I don't remember the year. I think it was 2003 or 4, I forget. The Congress had to go and reissue the edict to continue the program, and the program stated that the silver had to be mined in the U.S., and that still holds. Right now we're minting about 28 million ounces of Silver Eagles on an annual basis this year, 2009. Last year, 2008, about 20 million. The average before those 2 years was roughly 10 million or less per year. So it's basically doubled the last couple of years. And the point I'm getting at is that the U.S. silver supply internal to the continental United States is about 40 million ounces. So you can see that those two lines may cross. In other words, if the silver demand for silver eagles doubles again, we're basically saying that every ounce of silver that's mined in the U.S. is supposedly going to go into the Silver Eagle program. On top of that, there's one other thing, and that is there is a possibility, in fact, I'd say it's very probable, I just don't know when, that that issue ceases to exist. In other words, look at a peace dollar, look at a Morgan dollar, look at a franc, look at a corona, look at any gold or silver coin that you are aware of, and ask yourself, does this coin still exist today? And the answer in most cases is no. They ceased minting those coins. They moved to a different type of coin. They stopped minting silver and gold quite some time ago. And the point is that I think there'll be a day, and I just don't know when they stop minting silver eagles, probably silver maples, maybe ones in Europe. And if or slash when that happens, you may get a overnight premium shift. Certainly, I believe, and I know from experience, you'll get a premium shift in a collection. I have collections for both of my daughters that are called a typeset. And I'm not a big coin guy, but this is an easy way to plan for the future, especially if you've had kids or grandkids. You buy one of each year of a given type coin. Well, the type is Silver Eagle, and it's from 1986 to 2009 inclusive. You buy 1 ounce or one coin for every year. They're all identical except for the year on them, and that's called a typeset. Well, if you keep that type set and they quit minting them in, say, 2012, there will be a premium for anyone that holds a type set. Now, you can't buy those type sets right now for just the bullion price of those coins because some of those coins have very low mintages, and there are people out there like me that know that something like this is probably likely to take place in the next few years. It's something to keep in mind. So I just want to be clear. Someone says, well, David, you said buy the most silver you can for the money, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you have maples or if you have eagles. Well, there are instances where it could matter, but I wouldn't base my investing on that. I have a type set for, you know, each of my daughters. I don't have, you know, 25 type sets. So just hopefully gave that, and again, probably beat it to death, but I'll give it back to you and take the next question.
Sure. Bob Lacey in Chatham, Massachusetts says, do you agree with Ted Butler that the total short position on the futures market is around 500 million ounces and that this could produce a short squeeze in the near future? I would like to know if these are naked shorts or do they have to be bought back with something other than funny money that you just referred to?
Oh, that's a kind of a compound question.
Yeah.
No, it's always bought back with funny, not always, but it certainly could be bought back with funny money. There's a lot of misinformation on the Internet about what goes on in the futures markets and other markets. I wrote an article quite some time ago called Silver Fallacies, and some of these people are pretty good friends of mine, and, you know, I'm a gentleman. I'm not going to name names, but an example, and going off on a tangent here, and I'll get back to his question, that there's a lot about, you know, the deliveries. How many deliveries there are this month? And one of the guys that writes a lot in that space is a friend of mine in Canada. He's known me for a long time. And what he's really reporting is accurate but not complete. He's reporting notices of delivery. And a notice to deliver is not a delivery. It's like a notice to appear in court. If you get a notice to appear in court, that doesn't mean that you went to court and appeared. It means that you're notified that you're supposed to appear in court. Well, you might clear it up with paying your ticket off before you go to court. There's lots of things that could happen between the notice to appear and the actual appearance. It's the exact same thing in the futures market. Just because you have a notice of delivery does not mean that that silver or gold was delivered. So that wasn't even his question. His question was, could they pay off with funny money? Yes. Do they have to deliver this silver? Very, 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 very seldom. Now, do I think, is it 500 million? Yes. I mean, the numbers are clear. It's easy to work the math. That's the number. Do I think that that number will cause a short squeeze? I don't think it, not yet. That's my belief. I mean, I have no axe to grind with Ted. When I introduced Jim Cook to Ted Butler all these years ago and Ted started writing for Cook, it was, a relationship that they developed, and Ted's been on the Internet, you know, from that point forward. And he is, in my view, very, very concerned with the futures market. And from the way I approach the market, which is a different approach, certainly that is a very important piece of the puzzle, but I don't look at it nearly as much now as I did, let's say, 5 years ago. With the advent of the ETFs that are numerous, there's like four or five in the silver market alone, the amount of concern with the futures part of the overall silver market has diminished, in my view, substantially from what it once was. Basically, it was the only thing controlling the price of silver at one point in time. Now, this is speaking for Ted, and I don't want to, but I will try to give the idea. It's my belief, but can't be proven, that Ted still sees, in his opinion, which is as valid as my opinion, that the futures market still has the absolute most control in the silver market. I'm not saying it doesn't have the most, but it's very clear to me and my work, it is not as important a factor as it was, again, before the advent of all these silver ETFs. So I certainly look at it. I certainly believe it's important. I do not give it as much of a factor into my thinking of the overall big picture as I did at an earlier time. So I'm not that concerned with today after tomorrow. We have what's called a natural corner. The natural corner is that the physical demand on the silver market from both the investing side and the industrial side at some point in time will make the physical supply so tight that something will take place. Whether it manifests in the futures market, manifests in the ETF, manifests in the production line of Honda Motor Company or DuPont or Dow Chemical, I don't know. But I do know that something is going to happen. I believe the last place that will be admitted will be in the futures market. I think they have so many ways to wiggle out of it contractually, buy your futures contract, that they could stop the exchange, make you settle in cash, which is already in there. All these things are already in their contract. So there's nothing to prevent them from just following through the contract and saying, you know, here's your funny money, go away. Now, that's not true. I don't want to scare anybody. If you own a warehouse receipt or a COMEX deposit receipt and you have that in your hand, then that's it. I mean, you're solid. You don't have anything to concern yourself with. You own the silver. You pay for it, or the gold. It's in a warehouse or really a bank that's sanctioned by the CME, and you're fine. You don't have to worry about that. But if you had a bunch of options that you plan to cash into contracts and you plan to pay for them and have them delivered after an event happened, good luck, because the exchange for those type of situations will probably make you settle in cash.
Okay. Brian in Georgetown, Ontario, asks, what would you say is the probability of a full-on monetary collapse into hyperinflation versus some type of globally orchestrated new fiat reserve currency, possibly based on a basket of commodities?
Well, this guy must have something in my office here, because that's probably my biggest concern, and he said it rather eloquently. My biggest fear, of course, is a currency collapse. My predecessor, Jerome Smith, who was probably one of the silver leaders and economic thought leaders in the last bull market, wrote a book called Currency Collapse. And if you're lucky enough to find it either, you know, in the used bookstore, I would suggest you buy it. It's a pretty quick read. What we know from history is that all these fiat currencies eventually do collapse. What you don't want to have happen is a collapse to occur in a very short amount of time. In other words, if, you know, from a aspect of, you know, reality, we've had a currency collapse. I mean, the 1913 dollar is worth about 3 or 4 cents basis the Federal Reserve Board's own numbers. So if you lose 95-96% of the value of something, that's a collapse. The reason that we can adjust to it and no one's really, you know, picketing in the street is because it took from 1913 till now for that to take place. Now, it's accelerated since 1971 when we went off the international gold standard, but it's still something that people can deal with. They can deal with gasoline going from $2 a gallon to $4 a gallon. They don't like it, but they can deal with it. So the biggest fear I have is that it accelerates here at the end. In other words, it goes for gas, as an example, things increase by double overnight, everything across the board, you know, groceries, energy, clothing, anything. If that were to happen, then that would produce some type of chaotic situation depending, you know, where you lived and that type of thing. As far as being replaced, these bankers aren't stupid. They know the fiat game. They know history. They know a lot of things. And in their planning, they may have already proposed a couple of things, as this question alluded to, that there is an alternative currency structure waiting in the wings. And, in fact, I would bet my bottom dollar, no pun intended, that that does exist already. The real question for me is, if there is a currency crisis or a perceived currency crisis, how do you transition people from the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency into this new entity carefully enough where you don't get, you know, a chaotic situation in the interim? And I think that's the biggest question to answer. I don't have an answer for that. I don't see how you transition very easily. You get on national news or world news and you say, you know, we're going to start a transition from the U.S. dollar to this basket of currency starting a week from Wednesday. I don't see, once you announce it, how that doesn't prevent people from, you know, running down to their banks, pulling out their cash and jumping in the gold market. I don't know. So I really don't have an answer for you. It's something that concerns me. Probably it's the number one concern I have is it going to happen? And I believe, unfortunately, it will. I also want it to, I want an honest monetary system is what I want, and I think that would serve everybody the best. But unfortunately, these banks have a history of doing everything that doesn't work first before they go back to what they have to do, which is an honest monetary system. So I believe that we are facing some type of interim situation that will produce a great gnashing of teeth and great concern for a great deal of the world's population. But I'm not going to live my life based on what could happen. I have to base it on what is in existence today and what I think the future will hold. And I think as long as you have, you know, physical gold and silver and, you know, as a minimum, and then if you like to get some leverage in the situation, some top-tier, you know, resource companies, you're probably going to be in much better shape than everybody else, regardless of how this transition takes place, either smoothly or not so smoothly.
Okay. Ken Silver is in Colchester, Washington. It's my understanding the FDIC is broke, and in the event of any runs on accounts that the FDIC won't be able to pay, would you advise keeping bullion or coin rather than silver on paper?
I'm not sure I understand the question, or I got the FDIC part. Can you read it again, and maybe I might have to get a little clarification. Go ahead. Please say it one more time.
Yes, it's my understanding the FDIC is broke, and in the event of any runs on accounts that the FDIC won't be able to pay, would you advise keeping bullion or coin rather than silver on paper?
Yeah, I got it. Okay, yeah, so the FDIC is broke. And can they pay out on a bank run? The answer is no, but I have to put my tongue to my cheek and say yes eventually, because the Treasury is the backup. And, I mean, basically, since we're on a system that, you know, is electronic funny money, I doubt highly that a personal depositor would not get their money rather quickly, whatever that money is, meaning, you know, either paper dollars or electronic funds. So I'm not real concerned about the FDIC. I mean, from a theoretical point of view, of course I am. But from a practical point of view, even though it is broke, I'm not that concerned that, you know, my bank wouldn't be able to pay me off within a week time or less, even if my bank couldn't be rescued by the FDIC, the Treasury would step in and take care of that. Having said all that, yes, you're very smart to have silver and or gold or both outside of the system. I mean, that's one of the primary things that I teach, is that the reason that you want physical gold and silver is it's the only asset class that's outside of the system itself. I mean, if you own a mining company or you own a gold certificate, some type of paper gold or paper silver or an ETF or any of the, you know, certified bank deposits of gold or silver, anything that's a piece of paper that represents gold or silver, that's what they are. They're a piece of paper that represents gold or silver. It may very well be in the bank. I mean, I'm not saying all these things are fraudulent because they're not. Some are valid. Yet, if you have a problem, let's say you have a bank closure for whatever reason, what good does that certificate do you? Now, that doesn't mean you should have all your gold and silver at home either, but it does mean that you got to have some, in my view, you should have some outside of the system. Remember, if you were going to draw, put the Great Wall of China in your head, we'll do a thought experiment. If you're going to put a big fence down the center of your property, and you put everything that you owned on one side of the fence, which is, you know, your house, your car, all of your assets, your stocks, your bonds, or whatever, and then you put your gold and silver coins on the other side of the fence, now you've got a separation from everything that is in the system versus everything that's out of the system. And the only thing outside the system are gold and silver coins or bullion. You cannot have it any other way. Even a stock or a gold stock or silver stock still requires a broker, a banker, some fiscal transaction to take place in the electronic trading platform in order for that to be sold and for you to get either electronic debits into your credit or a check that you have to take to the bank in cash. So see where I'm going with this. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, the collapse is going to happen and that if you don't have gold and silver coins, you're not going to be able to eat. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you have the assurance that in the worst-case scenario, you have something that you can rely on and have been able to rely on for 5,000 years. Cash is pretty similar. Let's be objective here. If you have, you know, $1,000 in $20 bills and the bank's closed for a few days, I mean, you're probably better off, you know, being honest here with $20 bills than you are with $200 in silver coins or 200 silver dollars because, one, why would you want to, you know, spend the silver if you didn't have to? And secondly, everyone still recognizes the $20 bill. So probably, again, beat this one to death. But, yeah, I think, you know, in these days, I don't think it's not – I think it's a good idea to have a fair amount of cash and a fair amount of gold and silver that you can get to readily. But I certainly, again, wouldn't say all of it. I teach to keep it in three locations. I mean, we have it, have some here. I mean, I can't run a silver investor website, and probably, you know, it's pretty obvious we probably have some silver around here. But not that much, really, relatively speaking. We have it secured in two other places. And so, you know, that's just a prudent way to do it. As far as cash on hand, probably have a month or two's worth of cash on hand as well.
Okay. I want to say this. We're going to we'll be done with the questions shortly that were from left over from the last time. And then I know people have already submitted some questions, and there's one holding on the line. Just hang with us a few more minutes, and we'll be to that. Robert in Simi Valley asks, when prices really go up, do you expect 1,000-ounce bars of silver to be shipped out of the U.S. to London or Dubai?
No, I don't. The international bullion market is fairly robust. I mean, there's 500 million ounces of silver in that form. A lot of it sitting in the LBMA right now, fair amounts in Dubai right now. I think that the real big money that's savvy, that understands what's going on, have probably positioned themselves already. When you get the panic buying that I think he's alluding to, when that happens, I believe this time around there won't be that much physical available to really purchase. I mean, if you have a billionaire or $1 billion hedge fund that wants to come in and really load up on the silver market, I don't think you're going to be able to in the physical realm. You might be able to get into some of the mining stocks or something. That's why these things will go ballistic. But there won't be – most of the silver will be held in tight hands and then willing to part with it. So it's possible. You ask my opinion. It's just an opinion. It's not that it couldn't, but I doubt it.
Okay. Roger Wilson in New York City ask, in clarifying my question about day trading or ways to invest and increase silver position short term, I already collect physical metal, So next, what is the best way to invest my fixed income in silver? I want to multiply my investment, but I do not trust ETF. Does your monthly report point me in the right direction, whether to day trade, options, et cetera? What do you recommend?
Well, I'm good at some things and not good at others. And the old adage that a man that knows his limits knows a great deal. My trading is based on long-term position trading. I mean, we might do two or three positions in a year's time. And that's what I teach, and that's what's in the report. So from somebody that, you know, has plenty of time and can be on their computer on a daily basis and loves that type of lifestyle, more power to you. It's not something that I do well. So, no, my report wouldn't serve that type of individual very well. My study and, you know, being an investor since I was a young kid until present day, I learned kind of the hard way. And this is my experience. Again, I'm not making it right. I'm not making it wrong. I'm just giving you my experience. The big money, like Jesse Livermore said, the hardest thing to do was to sit. And, you know, I got into silver standard at 65 cents and watch it go to, you know, $40 an hour sitting at 2239. So should I have sold it at 40 and bought it back at 20? Yeah, you could say I should have. But, you know, from 65 cents to 2239 is still a pretty nice ride, and I think we're just in the intermediate phase of this market. So the point I'm making is that in these major secular bull markets, if you buy right now, if you have time and whatever, there's several ways to do it, and it's got to suit your own personality. Certainly you could day trade. You can accumulate a big position. If I have a big investor and they want to know, you know, a conservative approach, I put big money in serious companies. Serious money goes into serious companies. I've taught that from the beginning. I still believe that. A lot of companies have options. I mean, you can write options on a monthly basis, and depending on the volatility, make about 5% a month. And a good trader in the futures market making 5% a month is pretty good. I'm not saying every month. I want to be clear here, but the volatility in the metals is pretty high. And because of the volatility being high, you get a good option premium. And the option writer gets to take the money about 85% of the time. So sort of like being a bookie, the odds are highly in your favor if you have a big position in, you know, five or six top quality gold and silver stocks and you write options against your position. But that's just an idea. But that would be the type of thing I do probably in a premium service. That's kind of beyond the and above and beyond the average investors, you know, buy and hold. And I just want to have, you know, a safety position in my portfolio. So it depends, again, on the individual, what your lifestyle is, what your goals are, and everything else. I think most traders, especially if they aren't really seasoned at it, have a tendency to overtrade. I know I did in the beginning. You know, I had to find something to jump on. It almost gets to be like a gambling habit. I'm speaking for myself here. I've calmed way, way, way down from those days. I'm much more thoughtful on when I sell a position or I buy another one. Willing, if I see what I believe will be a strong sideways market, to write options against my positions and just rent my stock for a few months and let people pay me rent on my stock, that type of thing.
Yeah, sounds like a mellow, cautious discernment. Jim Pike in Tracy, California, says, when the time comes to sell our silver coins, rounds, and bars, how does one go about that?
Well, at the top, there won't be much of a problem to sell. There'll be a lot of options. One is the dealer that you bought it from. The others is, you know, neighbors or whatever, although you can do that. You could sell either through eBay, one of the brokerages, any of the coin dealers that are reputable, which is almost all of them, will buy back from you. So, I mean, if you bought from dealer X, you could sell to dealer Y. There's no reason you couldn't. You could sell locally if you're in a decent-sized town. Almost any decent-sized town has some type of coin dealer. So selling back would be too hard. And then, of course, the Internet now, there is not only eBay. There's a couple of sites that I know will be up and coming next year that have platforms, and there are several already. I mean, you go to AMPEX, American Precious Metals Exchange, and set up an account with them right now today. And you have an account, and you can sell through them anytime you want. So there's lots of options on how to do that. People seem that are new, and he may not be new, but seems most from my experience, the people that are new are like, oh, I believe in buying it, but I'm so worried about how to sell it. believe me, at the top, selling will not be a problem. It's going to be buying that will be the problem, I think. I mean, I think that we're getting such a tight supply, especially on the silver side, gold as well, that to buy in size may be a problem. But, no, there's always a market. It's not something I would be overly concerned about.
Okay. And the last question from last time, and it's actually one that I'm going to answer because it relates to that event. I had to go to the dentist. It's from, I think it's B. Feaser from Chesterfield, Missouri, asked, I had to go to the dentist, so I missed Mr. Morgan's conference. I think he's talking about the webinar, or he or she, whoever they are. How can I still hear and see this conference? For that webinar, what you would do is go to www.republicmagazine.com/webinar, and it's about the sixth listing down at this time from the top. I think after this one is posted today, it'll be the seventh down. And it was just saying, you know, what it was. It was very good. It was loaded with a wealth of information. There were a lot of questions answered, you know, and that's why I wanted today to just go right into the questions so that we could move through more and more of them. But I invite you to listen to the replay. We may not, you know, go into great depth on certain questions because they may have been handled last time. But I can say this, you'll really be glad that you did when you go and hear the replay. So with that, I wanted to mention that we're going to move on to current questions. And with that, I wanted to say that if you do have a question for David today, what you want to do is if you're on the phone line, you want to hit dial *2 on your phone keypad, and that'll let us know that you do have a question, and we'll unmute the line. We have two people holding. I'm going to take them in just a second. If you're online, then just type it in the question box that's right there on the page. You might want to put a first name and a city so we'll know where you're from. And we'll certainly take this first question here. We have Bernardsville, New Jersey. I've just unmuted your line. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, that's you.
Ah, thank you. Mines management, can you comment on that, the feasibility study and the chance for, you know, approval and perhaps when? And number two, they recently pulled their secondary, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. I know some people said perhaps because Silver Wheaton kind of balked at them doing a secondary at this level.
Yeah, that type of question, thank you. And one, just for full disclosure, I own Mines Management. I've known them for years. I know the founder, Dr. Green, he and I used to be very close. He's long retired now. I really can't answer those kind of questions on this type of a format. They'll certainly be in the report, and that gives me an opportunity to explain to our listeners, and you're probably a subscriber, that you know, I do a lot of work in the mining sector because I believe that once you have established a bullion position, the way you're going to catch up to people that bought gold under 300 and people that bought silver around 5 is to buy the underlying equities. They're very undervalued relative to where the bullion is already. So once the feeding frenzy starts, and I think we're going to start seeing that fairly soon, there's going to be a great deal of people moving into the sector because they are too lazy or don't understand the market to go buy physical metal. They'll buy the underlying mining equities. I like the stock. I own it. I think what you stated is accurate as far as Silver Wheaton is concerned, but that's about as far as I want to go. In the January issue, we go through I think it's around 20 or 25 companies. I do that every January. It is a painstaking, I want to use the word pain, but it is a painstaking process that we go through to ask every company. This is not every mining company. There's 4,000 of them, but of the 20 that we like pretty much, and some of these I actually don't like them, but they've got really great promoters, and so we get a ton of questions about them. I know there's a lot of interest in that company. So we ask every company the same basic questions, which is, what are you going to do in 2010, and what did you do in 2009? Well, we've been doing that for several years now, so I get to hold their feet to the fire because I can go to last year's report and say, well, Mr. Mines Management, you told us that in 2009 you were going to X, Y, and Z, but you only did X. So now I want to know why you didn't do Y and Z, so I can hold their feet to the fire. We do that, again, for about 20 companies in the junior space, and we comment on our top-tier cash rich on hedge mining companies where you put your serious money. But I do like the company. I do own it. And I think what you stated is probably accurate at this point.
Thank you.
Great. Anything else, caller?
No, that'd be it.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I, hopefully this person that is now on here is the one that maybe got disconnected before. I don't know, but they're from Columbus, Mississippi, it says. Are you there, caller?
Yes.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
I got in on this call kind of late. You may have covered this. Would it be better to have denominations of silver rather than denominations of gold if we ever have to resort to hard currency?
Well, yeah, because, you know, you buy your bread and butter with silver, but, you know, with gold you're going to have to buy the bakery. So, yeah, but I think you should have both. But, yeah, for a day-to-day transaction, certainly, that's the way it worked when we were on a bimetallic standard. I mean, you might buy your car with some gold, but you certainly would buy your grocery with silver. So, yeah, that's the same principles apply here.
So if a person really had limited resources in the way of investing in hard currencies, it would be better to do it in silver.
Yes, it would.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else, caller?
That's good.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And, okay, just one second. I'll move on to our questions that we have online. We have William in Anaheim, California. Do we face the martial law everyone is getting videos of? The Canadian Armed Forces are unloading equipment here in California. I've seen them myself unloading their tanks and troop carriers. We are all scared to death. Anything you want to comment on that?
Well, really, I prefer not to, but I will. I mean, so I just contradicted myself. Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, we are in uncharted water. We are in very interesting times, put it politely. Is there going to be martial law or not? There isn't until it happens. Will it happen? I don't know. Could it happen? Certainly. I don't like to live my life in fear. I don't like anyone around me to live their life in fear. I mean, you know, people, I'm going to digress here a moment, but one of the questions I get the most often is, you know, what I think about confiscation. And one, I don't think it'll happen. I really do not believe the confiscation will happen. But the follow-on question, no one ever asks, and the one I really get on my high horse about, is that, look, when do you make a stand? When do you stand up and say, our God-given constitutionally secured rights, give me by law the ability to buy gold and silver and own it in my own name? That right has not gone away. So when are people in this country going to grow some backbone and start standing up for what they believe in? I mean, I'm sorry if I sound like I'm getting off, but I am. You know, the only thing that's preventing us from having our country back is us. And people have just been dumbed down and taught that they should give in to authority. I try to teach my household to question authority, question everything, question me. Question my ability, question yourself, but especially question those in positions of power, because I know the quote, I forget who to give credit to, but, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. That's what we're facing. Will it happen? I don't know. Could it happen? Absolutely. I'm not saying to go out and, you know, start taking them on either, but I am saying in principle, I mean, if we had enough people that stood up by writing letters, faxing, and phoning Congress and telling these Congress critters that they got it all backwards, that they serve us, we might not be in a position that this gentleman is alluding to right now. And I don't know if it's a fact to be solved or not. I'll take him at his word. It certainly could be the case. But, again, you know, in the greater scheme of things, maybe we get what we deserve. Maybe we have to get to this point before people start saying, you know, I've had enough, I'm not going to take any more, I am going to stand up. Because certainly people have laid down to this point in time. I mean, when we went off the international gold standard, to the best of my knowledge, only two people showed up on the White House steps. James Blanchard, God love him, long deceased, Donald Blanchard and Sons. It's now run by Brian London out of New Orleans, one of the best gold conferences in the old days. I don't think it's that great a conference anymore. That's a personal opinion. Jim Dines. And these guys said, you know, in public on the steps that this is going to cause great problems ahead. Well, you know, me being a student of monetary history and the precious metals that I am, thought that that was the case in 1980. And I was wrong. But I think we're certainly getting to that point now. So I'm sorry if I went off on you. I don't mean to be yelling at anybody, but it really gets my goat that people are just so willing to do whatever Big Brother tells them to do. Like, well, turn in your gold. Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. I don't think, and I don't know. I mean, I speak for others. Cause I don't know. I don't know your head and heart. I know mine. But I know what kind of information I get, and I know the kind of nervousness and the fear of the people that come up to me at the trade shows and in the conferences and around the world where I travel. And they all just seem so ready, from my perspective, to jump in and do whatever they're told to do. Well, it should be just the opposite. You should be dictating to them what to do. So I'll cool off there, Earl, and calm down a bit. We can take the next question.
That's fine. I think you're right. It's really good to be more proactive and focused on what we want to create, what we would like to have in the world, rather than always reacting and being in fear and maybe energizing the wrong end of the spectrum. Anyway, so much for that. That was my little soapbox. Ken from Edmonton says, do you have any thoughts on Huldra Silver HDA?
I'll say that again. I might have missed part of it. Do I have any opinion on what?
On Huldra Silver HDA.
I think it's it's a refiner in Germany. If I know what he's alluding to. Yeah, all the refiners in Europe are fine. If you're buying from them, I wouldn't worry about it at all. Again, gold is gold and silver is silver. Are the refining of that to the standards that are, you know, LBMA quality? Yes, they are. So if you're buying from them, I would have no issues with them, though.
Okay. And Bob Anderson and Jasper asked David, what is your take on the recent uptick in the USD dollars and its impact on gold and silver bullion and mining stocks, short-term and long-term?
Short term, it's easy to call, and he already knows the answer, and that is it's going to, you know, have some influence on the gold and silver price and mining equities. They're all going down rather than the dollar going up. I think the bigger question comes out of looking longer term, because this one I don't have an answer for, but I'll give you some information that you can ponder, and I will make a comment on what I think might be the case. If you go to the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee minutes from the last meeting, and you read the fourth paragraph, it says, in light of the ongoing improvements in the functioning of financial markets, the committee and the Board of Governors anticipate the most Federal Reserve special liquidity facilities will expire on February 1st, 2010. So what I just said is the Federal Reserve Board issues an Open Market Committee minutes that they are basically asking for their dollars to come back home by February 1st, 2010. Well, where are we? We're at the end of 2009. So we're saying in about a month's time that the Fed is asking for people that have been using the dollar carry trade, borrowing at zero and lending in another currency for interest and making a free float, to stop doing that, basically, because they've got to take that yen or renminbi or whatever that they are using and convert it back into U.S. dollars and send it back to the Fed if they have borrowed. Now, this concerned me more when I first read the FOMC minutes than it does right now as I'm doing this interview, because I talked and did this with Jim Poplava on the Financial Sense News Hour, which some of the listeners may know I do on a monthly basis or so. And Jim had his son look at this, and he informed me before the show that a great deal of this money has already been paid back. So how much is left to be paid back in its month's time frame, I don't know. If there is a big scramble for the dollar, which could be the case, but again, according to Jim, and I don't want to speak for Jim, but he did indicate that a great deal has been paid back. But whatever remains is could be a very big scramble to get into dollars and out of whatever else you have that needs to be converted back into dollars. That could put more pressure on the U.S. dollar to the upside temporarily. Will it have a long-term impact or not? I don't think so. I think the long-term impact on the dollar has pretty well been spelled out by the Fed a long time ago under the Greenspan situation, meaning, as I call him in the Morgan Report so many times, tongue-in-cheek, but very accurately, Dr. Green expand. He has expanded the money supply at all levels for so long that I don't think it can be reeled in. Yes, reeling in these loans short-term can cause the dollar to go up. Longer term, I think fundamentally there are so many stresses and so many problems in the system that the dollar is, like all fiat currencies, I think is basically doomed over time. So I think from a longer term perspective, you're probably smart to stay in, you know, hard assets, you know, and it's not just the gold and silver world either, you know. I mean, one, I think you should invest in yourself. You know, education is key. If you're laid off or looking for, you know, if you're in a transitionary phase right now in your life, you know, get educated or retrained or that type of thing. If you have a going business, I mean, it's always good to, you know, continue your business activities or try to improve them. On the other hand, if you're just a passive investor, then you've got to look at areas in the marketplace that, you know, serve people the best or the most important. Which would be, you know, your commodity sector, in my view, you know, food, energy, that type of thing.
Okay. Glenn in Gaithersburg says, Dave, do you see large-scale public participation picking up on the next leg up in gold, silver, ostensibly coming this winter? Or do you think that this is still more than a year away? A follow-up is it likely to be more of a price breakout-based wave to draw in the public, in your opinion, over $25, for example, for junior stocks to begin to make a serious run? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it did. I'm trying to form the answer while you're reading the question. It's the way my brain works. Yeah, good question. Right now, let's do it from a psychological basis, and I've given this lecture many times. But you have basically four phases to any market, and I think the metals being the top-tier market, and I think it's going to go down in history as one of the biggest financial windfalls ever, but that's my belief, can't be proven yet. But you have pessimism, skepticism, optimism, and euphoria. So skepticism is where we were back before 2000 in the gold and silver markets, probably all the way to 2003 in silver. And this is where everyone is very, very pessimistic. I think I said skeptic, but very pessimistic that, you know, these metals are never going anywhere. Why would anyone ever buy gold? It never is going up. Look at it. It's been in a 20-year bear market, and silver never goes above 5. This is total, total pessimism. And that's how all markets start. And there aren't any buyers, hardly anyone is in these markets. Again, it could be a stock market could do the same thing, but we're talking metals. Then you get into the skeptics. The skeptical frame of the market is where silver finally breaks above 550. And I went around the world and I said, you know, once 550 is breached to the upside, nobody knows how high is high. Those are my exact words. Well, we know now, looking backwards, because this was several years ago, that when silver did break out on my call, I'm trying to be a little egotistical here, but I did. I said it would probably be September of whatever the year was. I got it right anyway, 2003, that it would go up, and it would go up fairly rapidly, but I don't know how high it's going to go. Well, it turned out to be 840, and people were reading my reports at that time. I suggested anyone that was leveraged should probably get out around 720. But I did that after the market closed. The market opened at 740 the next day, and then it went up to about three more trading days, 840, and came back down. It actually touched 555 before it based and went back up. So that was a skeptical part of the market. People see it go, it goes rapidly, then it comes right back down. They're skeptical. And a similar thing happened in gold, but not to the level it does in silver. Silver is far more volatile. So there's a total pessimism, then there's skepticism that, oh, it's going up, but it's just a brief bear market rally. I don't think it's going to go very far. Then we get into the optimism phase of the market, and this is what he was asking about. This is where I believe we are now, and this is where more and more of the public starts to wake up to whatever part of the market hits their fancy, the fiat money system, the Federal Reserve, hard assets, tangible assets, gold IRAs, you name it, for whatever their particular reason is, they have their own reason to get into the metals. And that optimistic phase usually lasts for a few years. And I believe that is where we are beginning to get to right now. So that will be the next leg up. But I think that is going to take, answering this question, most of 2010, probably into 2011, maybe as far as 2012. I don't know. The market knows I don't, but that's my best guess, having watched these markets in the past. And then we get into the euphoric stage. And that is where it's the biggest money can be made in the shortest amount of time, but it's extremely treacherous. It's a very, very tough thing. Look at the tech wreck back in the 90s. I mean, you could have made a lot of money if you were smart enough to stay in the market for 2 months and no longer. And that will happen to metals, in my view, unless we go back onto a gold standard of some type or commodity standard that involves gold. So what you'll have is everybody and his brother on CNBC, Time Magazine, et cetera, will be touting the benefits of owning precious metals. And when I put a sell signal out, I'll probably be the most hated guy on the planet because everyone will think that I've been smoking something funny or I've lost my mind or I'm taking drugs or something because I've been one of the biggest advocates all the way up to buy precious metals, and now I'm saying you should sell them. But I'll address that, you know, when the time comes. Again, I don't think we're going to see that probably till 2011 or 12. So I think we have a couple good years. Where will people come into the mining stocks at the $25 silver level? I think that's pretty good. They might have heard me before. I've never used that number in conjunction with when will the public really start panicking into buying the precious metals and equities. But that's as good a guess as any. Really, there hasn't been that big a participation in this sector outside of what I call the metals heads. I mean, these are people that, you know, follow me and the others, Jay Taylor and all the others that speak in this space, Bill Murphy and, you know, all the people at the Silver Summit and the gold conferences and that kind of thing. I mean, there's this group of people that, you know, follow us around or whatever cities we're in, and it's a small group. But the general public is still not in this market. That's a fact. And when they start coming into this market, it's usually when markets are showing good strength, people are optimistic, people are starting to talk about it. I mean, gold's been talked about a lot in the last couple of months. So I'm very convinced that we are in the next phase, the optimistic phase of the market, but we're just starting that. When will they come in? Probably at higher prices. Once every little penny, I should say penny, well, some of these are penny stocks. So everything that's in our junior speculative part of the portfolio, when every one of those is back up to the price we initiated coverage or higher, that's probably a good indicator that the public getting ready to get back into this market.
Okay. Fred in Princeton, New Jersey says, is there any reasonable protection from theft of physical bullion and coins? Most apartment dwellers must allow entry by repairmen at the discretion of the building owners?
No, I mean, you know, common sense applies, obviously. I think even in an apartment, there's probably good places to hide it. But, you know, that's a tough call. I mean, I get this question fairly often because most people that subscribe to my service or services are my age or older, and that makes sense. You know, it depends on the city. There are some private vaulting facilities in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. They're few and far between. I mean, if you could use a safe deposit box in a bank, it wouldn't be my first choice, but it's better if you're concerned, you know, repairman coming into your apartment or you're not there or something, then that would certainly be something I would consider strongly. There's also the ability to leave it with a friend. I mean, maybe you have a very close friend or relative that you trust. You know, I mean, there has to be some trust among us all at some level. And, you know, that's a possibility as well. But there's, you know, just think it through in a common sense way. There's certainly things you can do, still own the metal and still feel comfortable that you can leave. The other option, if you totally you know, want metal exposure, but just don't want it around, then, you know, you go to the best paper, silver, and gold you can find, and there's several examples there. I mean, you can go to Central Fund of Canada. That's CEF on the American Stock Exchange. There are a couple of silver ETFs I favor over some of the other ones. There are some certificate programs. There are some dealers that will hold it for you that I do trust. So there are some options, and that's about the best I can do on that question.
Sure, sure. Well, I know I think this might be a good time to give out your contact information so that people can follow up with you. And do I understand right, you have a special for the listeners to today's webinar?
Yes, I can extend what I did on the last one. So the best way to get a hold of us is over the Internet. It is an Internet-based business, and that's silver-investor.com. Or if you forget that, silver-investor.com, you can always type David Morgan into Google, and it will definitely point you in the right direction. All the contact points are there on the website. Just hit the Contact Us button. You'll get the phone number, the physical address if you want it, email, anything like that. If you need the email now, it's support, S-U-P-P-O-R-T, at silver-investor.com. Our staff will take those.
And then
for the special, yeah, we're going to let everyone that wishes to preview the Morgan Report for free for 30 days. And the way you do that is quite simply to just go to silver-investor.com/RM for Republic Magazine, just the letter R and the letter M, lowercase, but I think we've got it set up lower or uppercase will work. And that will give you the ability to look at the members-only section of the website, and I'll just let you look at it because it'd take me too long to describe everything that's in there.
Okay, and I know that we've gone about an hour now, and I'm not sure what your timing or schedule is. There are more questions, and we can stop at any point. It's whatever your preference is on that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm here in the office, so let me go out and get a real quick drink of water. I'll take three more. Let's do that because I'm kind of in the mood. I'm getting rather zesty here on these. These are some really, really good questions, and I love questions that really make me stop and think. Of course, most of the stuff I've thought about in the past, but that one on martial law was a bit unsettling, I have to say that. So, yeah, go ahead, Earl. Let's take
okay.
Two more, and we'll call it quits.
Sure. That sounds great then. We have Marty in Chicago, huge fan and Silver Investor subscriber. Do you have any advice or input on investing in slabbed and graded silver coins as part of a silver portfolio? Thanks.
Somewhat. I mean, I am not the man on the rare coin market. I don't spend a lot of time there. I have a fair amount of slab coins that I bought at the right time. I think there were MS64 Morgans, and I think I was paying like under $50 a piece for them years ago. Sort of knew it was about as low as they would go. Plus, some of my friends in the business are very, very studied in the rare coin market. I am not. I don't have the time to devote to it. But I think if you are interested in that part of the market, the best thing to do is to find somebody that's very good at it and use them for advice. I just really can't give you any, but I do think that there are sectors within that space that are advantageous, but I think generally speaking, you're better off generally doing just the bullion type of investing. So don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. It's just when you're dealing in the rare coin world, you got to be very, very studied on what you're doing and that type of thing. With silver, I think you got a little bit more leeway than gold. I think that silver is going to become kind of a hot NASDAQ stock, using the analogy of what happened on the tech boom. The NASDAQ stocks went much higher than the Dow stocks or the New York Stock Exchange stocks during the tech boom. And I think the same thing will happen with silver relative to gold. Gold will go far, far, far higher and will certainly take in a great deal of new buying, but silver will be kind of the darling. So if you're looking at, the rare coin or slab coin market, I would favor myself silver over gold because I think the premium markup would be higher relative to what it would be in the gold world. But that's just my opinion. I don't have a lot of experience in the slab coin market.
Okay. And we have Leslie in Sandpoint, Idaho. Are you there, Leslie?
Hi. Yes, I am. Hello?
Go ahead. Do you have a question, Leslie?
Yes, thank you. I missed the part at the beginning about the premiums. the very beginning of the call.
Okay, well, the very beginning of the call, we talked about bag silver or junk silver, and the premiums on bags is very low, usually, sometimes at a discount. So a bag, a 1,000-ounce face value bag holds, depends on who you talk to, but roughly 712 ounces of fine silver. So if you multiply 712 times the current spot price of silver, you'll find out what the cost of a bag of silver will be in theory. For melt, that's what the melt value is. If you took that 712 ounces to the smelter and it was $17 an ounce, it would be worth $12,104. That bag would sell for roughly that amount, sometimes even less than that amount. However, there are instances where there's a big demand for bags or junk silver. It happened in 1999 with the Y2K scare, and the premiums went very high, like 30% over melt value. And when that happens, what I was stating is that it happens rarely, but when it does, you're probably smart to take those bags and either sell them or trade them for silver bullion, either in coin form like silver rounds or bar form like 100-ounce bars. That's what I said.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, caller. Okay. Let's go back to these questions here. So it sounds like maybe we're going to take a couple of more. Is that where you're at?
Yeah, two more. Yeah, we'll do two more, sure.
Okay. Let me see. Let me come back to this. Switching from one interface to the other. Okay. David, what do you see? This is from Jeff in Phoenix. What do you see the major price drivers will be in the silver market in 2010? Many say demand will be falling from digital photography, and supply will be increasing from new mines coming on stream, which will keep prices low.
Well, I don't know what 2010 is going to do. I mean, the market does. As far as photography, that's a total myth. I mean, this guy should invest $10 in my book and read the chapters on photography and get squared away on that. Most of the people that follow me closely know what a myth the digital photography thing is. It's a total myth. Has nothing to do with the silver market as far as supply and demand. It's a zero-sum game. As far as new supply coming on, could the growth rate in the production of silver based on the best two studies in the silver market, one produced by CPM Group out of New York, New York, and the other by the Silver Institute, written by GFMS in London, both have indicated that we've had maybe 1% or 2% growth rate in the amount of silver mined over the last few years. It may continue. We answered this question actually earlier in the program that, someone asked me what I thought for this past year or this year that we're closing out, 2009. I think it'll be flat. 2010, probably flat, maybe some growth. I'm not too worried about, total produced silver in 2010. What concerns me more is what the first part of this question was. What will be the investment demand in the silver market? And that's a hard call in 2010, in my view, because if we get into higher unemployment, more uncertainty in the financial markets, more uncertainty in the physical economy, where there's more, plant closures and the auto industry throws up its hands, even the government can't run it, this type of thing on a global basis, then that will put more deflationary pressure on the economy on a global basis. And that is hard to predict what will happen. Safe money would be in gold and silver, but that doesn't mean everyone's going to think that way because everyone transacts in the currency that they're domiciled in. So that would mean that, I might have to sell some silver for, U.S. dollars to pay a debt or to make my house payment or whatever. So it's going to be a tough year to make a call, but I wouldn't worry about the photography side of things. That's a misnomer, and I'm glad he brought it up, though. It's always something that kind of amuses me because it's something that is very much not understood, but it's a zero-sum game. The amount of silver that was used as silver halide in 1999 was 275 million ounces. And the amount of recycled silver in 1999 was 275 million ounces. In 2007, the amount of silver used in silver halide processing was 175 million ounces, 100 million ounces less. And the amount of scrap recovery in 2007 was 175 million ounces. So I think you get my point. every ounce of silver that's used in silver halide processing goes back into the market. It isn't used up. People think that photography uses silver up, like a cell phone or a laptop computer or some other application. No, silver halide processing uses no silver in the end product. When you hold a color print in your hands, it has to have zero silver. All of that silver has to come back in the solution or the print is ruined. And I don't know anybody out there, maybe someone has a print that didn't produce properly, but if it did, it's because some silver stuck on the paper. If that happens, you have a ruined print. All the silver gets recycled. So it's really a zero-sum game. It has very little to do with the fundamentals of the silver market, although most people don't understand that unless they've either read it for themselves, read my book, or studied it on their own.
Okay. Adam in Salt Lake City. I'm new to investing in precious metals. Almost everything I read talks about the fear of hyperinflation. When did the hyperinflation fear start?
Well, it's an individual case. I mean, a hyperinflation fear starts when you have studied enough, read enough, understood enough that you go in and, you know, to your inside yourself and you say, geez, you know, it happened in Germany. It was a currency event. It took off rather rapidly. No one had control over it. It was devastating. Anybody that was invested in the Rheinmark basically lost everything almost instantly. Will that happen this time around? We don't know. But we do know that governments have a propensity to print their way out of these things, the United States not being any exception to that. Will it manifest exactly that way? No, I don't think it will. But it'll probably be some type of currency destruction. Again, going back to what we talked about earlier in this session, was the Federal Reserve Board itself has admitted on their website, if you care to dig it out, that the 1913 dollar is worth roughly 3 or 4 cents right now. So I suggest for your consideration, if one of your children brought home a 100-point quiz and they got a 4 on it, 4 out of 100, that you would consider that to be a miserable failure. And that's what the currency is, because the mandate of the Federal Reserve was to maintain stability in the currency, and they haven't. You know, 96, 97% of it is destroyed relative to when the Fed was founded with that mandate. So certainly they haven't kept up with their mandate, nor will they. Now, what we're arguing about is what happens to the remaining 4 cents. Is it going to go to 2 cents overnight, or 1 cent overnight, or a tenth of a cent overnight? I'm speaking in relative terms here. Or are we going to continue and take another, you know, 100 years to go from 4 cents to 4 tenths of a cent? History shows us that we're at that point of no return, where more and more of the public wakes up to the fact that the game's over and I need to get out of these things with pictures of presidents on them and into things that is going to maintain its value, whether that's gold, silver, bubblegum cans of beans, or plywood. It matters somewhat, because I think the metals are your best place to preserve wealth, but the point I'm making is that at the end of a hyperinflation, you'd rather have anything but the money. Quote-unquote money. It's really not money. It's anything but the perceived money. So at those instances, you will trade that or exchange that. Are we there? No. We're actually in a place right now, we're in a deflationary mode temporarily, where people are saying, geez, I've got all these debts, and speaking primarily within the U.S. now, within the continental or the greater U.S., Alaska and Hawaii, included. Sorry, I said the word continental. Point being that people need cash, and they are holding on to cash. The money multiplier of M1, the amount of turnover, is less than 1. What that means is that people are valuing cash a great deal. And so to summarize, and this is not, it may sound complicated, and it's not, but it is tough to make the call on which way is it going to go. There's enough fiat money out there in the world, especially in the U.S. dollar terms, to cause a hyperinflation in 12 milliseconds. It's a currency event. It can happen instantaneously. So it's not a function of how much has been printed. There's been enough printed already to have hyperinflation, but we don't have it. What we have is, as I said a moment ago, we have basically deflation right now, which means not, again, a function of how much has been printed, a function of the turnover of the money that is out there. And right now it's below one. People rather hold cash than spend it. And until that changes, the pressure's to the downside. You can never argue with the market. I mean, you might want to with the, you know, gold suppression and silver suppression, all these things that do exist, but yelling about them doesn't change it. At least it hasn't so far. So you have to clearly look at what is. And what is right now is that people rather hold dollars and spend them. And when is the psychology going to change where people rather spend them and, as I said a moment ago, buy anything than, you know, spend it on anything to get out of dollars? That psychology, we're way on the other side of that right now. Could it change? Yes. Will it change? I think so. When? Don't know. But it can happen very quickly. That's why you want to have a position of low debt and, you know, hard cash, meaning real money, silver and gold, ahead of time. Because if this thing takes off rapidly, you might not have the opportunity to position yourself where you want to be. So, you know, word of caution, again, let me come back and settle down. That, you know, all these things have been anticipated by myself and many others that write in this space, lecture in this space, tour in this space, speak in this space, and have written, you know, books much bigger and better than mine. And the bottom line is that this has been going this direction for many, many years. It did accelerate after the closure of the international gold window, August 15, 1971. Again, it doesn't mean the world ends. It doesn't mean that business stops. It doesn't mean that you know, life doesn't go on. What it does mean is what we clearly see now, and that is that business activity is being curtailed on a global basis. There's more uncertainty than there's been in a long time. There's higher unemployment, and there's a great deal of fear in the marketplace, as there should be, because people don't know what to expect in the future. But basically, you just got to march out every day, you know, with a good, clear head and heart, and do, you know, be an honest person and move forward. I don't like to lock myself into what might happen. I certainly want to prepare for it, but I want to live to the best of my ability and not live in a state of, you know, false expectations appearing real. I don't want to have this fear mode dictating to me when I have a mission, and the mission is to teach people that if we were in an honest financial system, it would benefit everybody everywhere, and that's the bottom line, and that's what I'm striving for. It's an ideal. It's an idealistic approach. I certainly don't know if it would ever happen, but it has happened in the past. I mean, once these things explode and burn out, then what usually happens is we do go back onto some type of a gold standard, honest system. And if that were to occur again, I believe, at least from experience of history, it would be the most beneficial thing to mankind. It would be the best blessing that anyone could have anywhere, because we're all on a level playing field, and we know when we buy something for a dollar what a dollar means, and when we borrow money what we really have to pay back. It's honesty. It's honesty throughout the system. So that will, I believe, occur, would occur in my lifetime. I think it will. Unfortunately, as I said earlier in this program, normally governments try everything that they possibly can that doesn't work until they come up with the fact that the truth is that they have to speak the truth again, at least on a temporary basis. When I mean temporary basis, it can be for decades, and go back on a system. Now the transition again, that's always the key. How's it going to transition? Usually it's like, excuse me, ladies, but the birth of a baby. It's a joyful thing at the end, but it's very painful in the interim, and I think that will be the case here. It'll be a very painful experience for many people in the interim, but once we're through it and we are on a level playing field on an honest financial system, it'll be one of the best platforms to move forward into a very high-tech society with nanotechnology, basically being able to build things that we can only dream of now. So I'm pretty bright about the long term, but I'm a little concerned about the interim.
Okay. Well, I would say maybe make this one I've got here the last question, and then we'll close it off. And it handles two people's questions. We have Lee from Sacramento. Says, I buy primarily silver rounds, and I want to know how great a risk is there of silver rounds being counterfeited. And immediately after that, John in River Run, Utah, asks, how do you guard against counterfeiting bullion?
Okay. Silver rounds being counterfeited is, I wouldn't say it couldn't be done, certainly. It'd be stupid to say it couldn't, but I would say it's almost impossible. I mean, silver is so underpriced right now. And, you know, the sound money, I mean, people know what sound money means, but they don't really think. And I'm speaking people generally. I mean, everyone on this call probably thinks quite well. But the name sound money came for a very specific reason. It's because the sound of the money. When you threw a silver dollar on the bar in the 1800s, it has a very distinct sound to it. And that's the truth. It's like the Christmas song, Silver Bells. I mean, you know, here's a silver dollar. And it has a very distinct sound to it. So that's one way, is just drop it. You know, get a silver eagle that you know is a government mint and clink it on the desk and then put your silver around and do the same thing. It should sound the same. Very remote possibility. It's just not worth it to make a fake silver coin. So in gold, a little bit more. Most of the gold counterfeits revolve around the Numi world. I know the coin guys that know me well are going to get mad, but they can get mad. It's not real prevalent, by the way, but it has happened in the past. And this is where you make a fake gold rare coin, and usually they're made to the gold standard of the coin itself. In other words, the gold isn't the issue. It's just the fact that it's a counterfeit older coin, and then they have that certified in slab, so you can't get the coin out. So you're buying probably the same amount of gold as if you're buying a real rare coin. It's just that the day that the coin itself has been minted, you know, illegally, and it's showing a date, and it's a new coin minted as an old coin and put into a slab container. Again, I don't want to scare anybody. It doesn't go on very often, but that's usually the way that the gold market is counterfeited. Is there some gold bullion out there counterfeited? I'm sure in the past there has been. I don't worry about it much. Buy from a reputable dealer. You shouldn't have any problems whatsoever. If you buy in the open market, meaning someone puts an ad in your local newspaper and says they're selling, you know, such and such silver, it depends what they're selling. If they're selling like junk silver in a bag, that's pretty hard to counterfeit. I mean, who would make a mercury dime on their own? That's pretty easy to qualify just by your own common sense. If they're selling silver bars or something like that, I would take it to the nearest coin dealer and have it verified before I, you know, put my money down. So, again, most of the stuff is common sense. I wouldn't worry too much, again, about, you know, counterfeit, but certainly if you're worried about it, there are ways. You can go on the Internet and do a Google search and type in counterfeit bullion coins, and they'll give you a lot of methodologies that you can use to test.
Great. Well, David, I really appreciate you taking all this time. I know we went a bit over, and we still had more questions, but we did handle a lot of questions, and that was great. What I'll do is retain those questions that are still there, and when you visit us again, we can always roll those out. And I think this time I'll give out David's site again. It's www.silver-investor.com, and I know you mentioned the special before, and I want to invite everybody to take advantage of it. David has certainly tirelessly shared with us and addressed so many questions, and I really appreciate that very much. I want to invite everybody to take advantage of his prior recording. That is, you'll find not only today's webinar posted, but also his previous webinar from a couple of weeks ago. I think it's going to be about 6 or 7 down in the list there, or to take advantage of any of the other webinars we've had in the past at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And in closing, David, is there any final thought that you wanted to share at this point?
Yeah, I guess so. I'll get a bit philosophical again and just say, you know, every day give it your best, you know. And I mean your best. Good is the enemy of the best is another one of my favorite quotes. You know, if it's good enough, good is good, but best is best. So do your best. And, You know, especially during this holiday season, and let's try to carry it through the year, you know, take that extra second or two wherever you are out in the public space to acknowledge the other person you're dealing with, whether you're buying a coffee at Starbucks or buying something at the grocery store or buying something at the hardware store or whatever. To acknowledge the other person as a full sentient human being, regardless of their race, religion, or color. Let them know that you acknowledge them as being as human as you are. And let's just, you know, on a one-to-one basis, let's get back to growing a backbone, being real with each other, and see the power's in the people. Let's just be real with each other. And I think that little shift, and I'm not saying that people don't do that, can have a large effect longer term. I believe in the butterfly effect. I believe if I'm the best I can be each and every day, that can't help but have some influence on everybody that comes in contact with me, either physically, whether they're physically within my presence, or verbally, whether they're listening on a call like this, or theoretically if they're reading my book, or intellectually if they're reading my newsletter or whatever. Because if we're able to do our best, we can certainly go to rest each and every day knowing that we've made a good day. We haven't had a good day. We've made a good day. We've done our best. So I'll sign off with that.
Great. I appreciate that. That's so appropriate. It definitely is. And I want to thank everyone that joined us today and invite you to join us tomorrow when we have Dr. Barbara Starfield, MD, on some very interesting information about primary care and other matters, and also some interesting observations on what the main causes of death are that may shock you. With that, David, thank you so much, and we will be in touch. And everyone, have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye-bye.